Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 30 of the Open One podcast. Can you believe we're at 30 episodes already? It's been an incredible journey, really. I started this about a year and a half ago, and I guess you never really know what to expect. What do you expect when you start a podcast? Do you just you can never really guess. And obviously, I didn't have 30 shows planned. I think I had just one show planned when I first started this. And I just continually keep finding all these amazing people to have onto the show. And they have some incredible stories. But still, even now, I only really plan one or two shows ahead. I mean, right now, I've got two shows planned after this one. So that takes me to about the middle of June. But really, it's like, okay. Just plan for one or two shows and we'll see who we find after that. But continually keep finding new guests, and there just seems to be unlimited amount of people that have amazing stories or a business or a project or a movement that they're working on. So it doesn't seem like there's going to be any shortage of amazing people to have onto the show. But if you have been following the show for or consistently for every single episode that I do, you'll notice that there are two other episodes where it's just me talking. And obviously, this is my show, my podcast, but most of the time I've had other guests on just because it's always interesting to speak to other people, learn about what they have to share and all the amazing life experiences that they've had. But of course, it's nice to share what I know. Having been on this journey for 10 years, I think there's a lot of what I've gathered over the time that I think people will find benefit from. And if you haven't already, you can check out my website, which is traviscook.uk, where I've got loads of free content on there in the forms of videos and articles and 29 episodes of the Open One podcast, and also 10 recorded live streams, guided meditations. And also, if you are interested in learning meditation one-to-one, you can book that with me. I have that coming up soon on my site too as well. If anybody actually just wants to learn meditation and be taught, well, I'd say the body scan technique is the best technique for beginners. If you want to learn how to meditate and you've never practiced it before ever, then you can go to my website and book a session with me. But you can also book a life coaching session with me. So that's all on my site. So I have all of this content on there free for the community. And there are a few things that you can pay if you want to, learn how to meditate or have a one-to-one session. So very excited to bring episode 30 of the Open One podcast to you all. I'm also going live on Instagram, but if you want to join me on Zoom and at the end of this podcast, if you have any questions about anything that I'm going to talk about over this show, you can come and have your say. The link is either on my Telegram channel, which you can find, you just search Travis Cook UK, or if you go to my Instagram and you look at my stories, you can see that there's a link and you can come and join us in the Zoom call. So, interestingly enough, I had this idea to do this podcast about death and meditation. Kind of an interesting combination, right? But I don't have any notes for this. This is going to be off the top of my head of what I know, what I believe in, and what I've experienced. And you're just going to get it coming to you in a free flow format. So I hope you enjoy it. I think you're going to enjoy it because although I don't have a structure and this is what I'm going to talk about at 10 minutes in, and this is what I'm going to talk about at 20 minutes in, I do have an extensive knowledge about these subjects. I've spent a lot of time researching these subjects. I've spent thousands of hours in meditation practice. And also Qigong. I won't be getting into Qigong in this podcast episode, but that's also another amazing practice I've spent a lot of time practicing. I've actually taught people Qigong and meditation all over the world. When I was traveling in like Australia and New Zealand, I've taken classes of these of teaching people Qigong and meditation, or just taught people one-to-one that I saw here and there. So I think we'll start out with some meditation, as I've already broke the ice with meditation, but it's very, very interesting. So, like I mentioned, I have taught people in person meditation, and this is something that is something that I believe to be true. But when I try and explain this, I don't know if I just don't do a good enough job, or for some reason, women don't seem to like to admit that they have this natural advantage over men, because every time I try and explain this to a woman, they just don't seem to see my perspective. They just seem to want to say that, nah, you're not, you know, whatever. But right, so as we can clearly see, men physically have the advantage in this world. There's no way a woman can ever be as strong as a man could be, and in general, men are always stronger than women, unless there's an exceptional case. But even still, if a woman was to train as much as she possibly ever could, she'll never be as strong as a man that has trained harder or even the same amount, because of the way the body is, they're just able to be physically stronger. That is just nature. But I believe, and I've seen this in my life, in my experience, that women have the advantage in the spiritual realms, in the psychic realms. And you see this play out in, if you ever go to a meditation class, ever go to a yoga class, ever go to a Qigong class or a retreat, some sort of spiritual retreat, 80 to 90% of the attendees are always women. They're just always women. And that's just how it is. There seems to be more women interested in these kind of subjects, in these kind of fields. But it's not only that. From my experience of teaching people meditation one-to-one, I can recall off the top of my head three separate occasions of three different women having incredible experiences on their first time ever meditating. And I've never had the same reaction or feedback from a man. So I can give you this one example. Let me just paint the scene, paint the picture for you. This really cool French woman that I was hanging out with in New Zealand, her name was Carol. Once we went to the woods, beautiful woods, all this kauri forest. It was just amazing, right? We went right into the heart of this beautiful woodland. And we sit down, and then she wants to practice the meditation because obviously she's heard me speak about it a lot, wants to try it. So we sit down, we begin the practice, and I guide her through it. And it's just a simple body scan meditation, which, so we're doing this for maybe 20 minutes. 25 minutes, and we come out of it, come out of the meditation. Obviously, I open my eyes and I look at her, and she just has this massive smile on her face. And I just look at her, I'm like, so how was that for you? And she was just like, that was absolutely incredible. And I'm like, what happened? Like, I mean, that was kind of all right for me, you know, I'm sitting here and I've already got hundreds and hundreds of hours of meditation under my belt. Not long ago, I'd done a Vipassana course and done 100 hours of meditation in 10 days. And I'm like, well, yeah, that was right. But what's so special about it for you? And she's like, I saw this incredible white orb, like in my vision, but my eyes were closed. And it was like this incredible sensation. And it went all over my body. And it was kind of like an orgasm. And it was just blew my mind. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Really? But that was just a quick meditation. How have you, first ever times meditating ever, had this incredible experience, and I haven't had that? What the fuck? So that sort of blew my mind. And honestly, just I can, words don't really do justice the feeling that I got from this woman, from what she experienced in this very short meditation, right? So it was quite mind-blowing. I'm just like, wow, okay. And I can give you two other examples of that, of not quite as powerful. That's definitely the most intense, but other women as well. Like, yeah, I just had this rush of sensations, and I felt all this pleasure, and it was really amazing. And okay, not every woman that I've taught has had this experience, but there are three that have had that, and it's quite amazing. And that's led me to believe, like, if you put these pieces together of what I've experienced, why there's just so many more women in this field, I think women naturally have the advantage in the spiritual, psychic realms. I just think that's just part of your advantage. But for some reason, every woman I've tried to explain this to has a bit of an aversion to accepting that. But that's just what I believe, what I've experienced. I think that men have the advantage physically, hands down. Obviously, that is obvious. We can see that. But what's not so obvious, what's not so often talked about, I never hear anybody speak about this, is how women have naturally have the advantage in the spiritual realms. And why do I mention that? Well, I guess it's just an interesting phenomenon. It's just kind of cool. But meditation itself, it's an amazing practice. I think pretty much everybody would benefit from doing meditation. And it's kind of funny, right? I wrote a post about this just today. People go, well, why? I don't want it. I can't focus. I sit down, I try and meditate, and I just lose focus. I'm not very good at meditation. I don't think it's for me. And I'm just like, what? You have absolutely, you're not grasping what meditation is actually for. That's exactly what meditation can help you with. If I take myself an example, I first started meditating 10 years ago, but I couldn't meditate and keep my focus for a second. For a second, I couldn't hold my focus when I was meditating. It took me a long time and a lot of practice to be able to hold my focus for a second. And I remember when it happened, I'm like, yes, wow, uninterrupted focus for a second. And you get 2 seconds, and then you get a little bit more. So that was really quite something. But to say that, oh, I have a hard time focusing, so I don't want to do meditation, is bullshit. That's a cop out, in my opinion. I think that's just a complete cop out. This, you're exactly the kind of person who would benefit from a bit of meditation, right? So I first started meditating 10 years ago, and the first technique that I practiced was just trying to empty my head of anything. It wasn't like I was trying to focus on one thing, or maybe listen to the sounds, or maybe do a guided meditation and go to some island somewhere, or do a mantra, or focus on my body. None of this. I just wanted to have nothing in my mind. I didn't get very far with that. And I can explain why in a moment. But that was my first ever attempts at meditating. And like I mentioned, I was pretty damn terrible at it. I could barely keep my concentration for a second. But there was something inside of me that was so determined, I just knew this was something that I had to keep practicing. So we skip forward to about, okay, I won't mention, because within that, I learned Qigong. About 2 years after that, I started my Qigong practice, but I could talk for another 20 minutes, half an hour just on Qigong. We won't mention that, apart from meditation is very useful if you want to start a Qigong practice. It's like it builds a very nice foundation. But anyway, so we skip forward to about 2017. Yeah, 2017, the beginning of 2017, went to New Zealand and I did a Vipassana course. If anybody knows what Vipassana course is, or if anybody doesn't know, about to explain it. A Vipassana course is a 10-day meditation course where all you do for 10 hours a day is meditate. And some of you might hear that and you're like, well, that sounds kind of chill. That sounds kind of relaxing, you know? Oh, wow, cool. A 10-day meditation retreat. Oh, fucking no. It is not relaxing. It is work. This is serious work, my friends. So during this time, there is no talking, there is no reading, there's no writing, there's no electronics, there's no sexual activity. You're not supposed to masturbate. None of this shit. Literally just you and your mind. That's it. It's kind of strange in a way because there are other people around, but nobody's allowed to talk to each other. You're not even supposed to look each other in the eyes. So when somebody's walking past you, you sort of try not to make eye contact. And the idea is you're not supposed to exercise either. So nobody's running around or anything. You've just got all these quiet people not looking at each other, walking around. In between the meditation sessions, it's kind of like being in a mental asylum. It's kind of like that. Because, yeah, it's a bit strange. But it is work, man. It is work. At 4 a.m., someone comes with a fucking gong outside your door. Bang, bang, bang. Wake up, motherfucker. And you're supposed to start meditating at 4:30. Meditate for about 2 hours. And then you have breakfast. Then you meditate, lunch, meditate, 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 meditate. It's serious work, man. And the first, few days, it's the physical pain of sitting down for that much time that is actually the biggest challenge. And part of what they teach you in this technique is to not focus on the pain. is to continually be meditating and focusing on your body, but not focusing on the pain. And I tell you, it's serious fucking pain. Sit down on the floor for 10 hours a day and tell me your ass don't start to hurt or your body don't start to get a bit stiff. It's serious work. And then after about the third or fourth or fifth day, also tied into that is you start to lose sleep. It starts to be a bit hard to fall asleep, but also the schedule itself. I mean, you stop meditating about, I think it was 9 p.m. You're supposed to be asleep by 9:30. If you can fall asleep at the drop of a hat, and unless you've got a superpower where you can do that, it's a bit of a challenge sometimes to fall asleep. So you think even if you went to sleep at 9:30, you're still up at 4, so you're never going to get 8 hours, and you're lucky if you got 6 to 7 hours, right? So you start to lose sleep. Also, you're meditating a hell of a lot. But something that happened to me, and I don't know if this happens to everybody or whatever, but during the first few days, they get you to focus on your breath before you do the actual body scanning. Anapana, it's called. And you're supposed to pay attention to the air coming in and out of your nostrils. And you sort of focus on like where my mustache is, and you really, really hone in on this part of the body. I don't know if I activated something that just shouldn't be activated, but I'm lying in bed and I just can't stop feeling this part of my body just above my lip. It's like it's just constantly glowing and buzzing. It's like I activated the nerve endings on the tips of my skin, so they were just constantly activated and I couldn't switch it off. And I tell you what, it was really strange. It was really quite disorientating. I'm trying to lay there asleep. I'm like, I just can't stop feeling my upper lip. It was starting to drive me a bit mad. I just thought I'd mention it in there because it was really strange, an unexplainable phenomenon that I don't have any way to explain, but that's what happened. But thank God I had the intuition to try and do a little bit of Qigong, because for some reason, moving this energy, and you're not supposed to do this, by the way. I broke the rules. You're not supposed to do any other technique apart from Vipassana. But I tell you what, I was starting to go insane in my room because I can't talk to anybody about this or whatever. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? I can't stop feeling my lip. So I did a little bit of Qigong. I moved a bit of energy. And thank God, for some reason, that cleared it and the sensations went away. And I was eventually able to go to sleep. So after about 4 or 5 days, the physical pain isn't even the problem anymore. That's actually not such an issue. The issue is the emotions, man. The issue is the emotional game. What's going on here? Because you'll have these moments where you have such great clarity and focus, and you're just in the zone, and you're like, wow, I am some Zen master. Look at me meditating all this time, and I can hold my focus. And wow, this is so amazing. And then half an hour later, you'll be like, holy fuck, get me out of here. I want to get out of here. I can't take any more of this. This thing is driving me insane. Fuck this course. I want to get out of here. It was quite the emotional roller coaster. I tell you, the Vipassana course is no joke. It's a real serious game. But if you wanted to get control over your mind, if you wanted to know yourself on a deep level, this is a very good way to do that. Because, yeah, 10 days completely on your own. Yeah, it has a lot of benefits, but it's work. It's not a chill out, relax, and zen out in peace and harmony. It's serious, serious work. But my biggest critique, I think I'll say this and then I'll finish my piece on the Vipassana course, but my biggest critique of the actual course itself is the fact that you have to sit through an hour and a half discourse at the end of every day. I think it's an hour and a half, at least an hour, from Essen Goenka. And okay, right, this course is free at the point of entry. You're supposed to donate, but you know it's free. But I think this is kind of the payment, other than you spoke. Yeah, it's kind of expected to donate. I did. But they kind of are trying to convert you to Buddhism throughout. Like it's he is quite funny. And when you've had a hard day meditating, you can't speak to anybody else. Somebody cracking a few jokes, and he is actually quite funny and entertaining. It does take the edge off. And obviously everybody's laughing in this hall. So that's like the only human interactions that you have is just hearing other people laugh. So that was nice. But there's something to be said about how this environment has an effect on your subconscious. Because if you think about it, you're meditating all the time. For me, I wasn't sleeping enough. And this is like the only voice that you hear. So you're in a bit of an open and vulnerable state. I think that can be a little bit, I don't know, detrimental to the subconscious if you start to have people put in their belief systems and it's the only voice you're fucking hearing over these days. There's things like demonizing sex. Obviously, Buddhism doesn't approve of that, at least this variation of it. And then also demonizing eating meat, but then also demonizing any other spiritual belief system and saying this is how everything is, you know, follow us, Buddhism, blah, blah, blah. So unfortunately, I didn't really like a lot of what he was talking about, and you have to do that. I even asked, like, when I wanted to do another one, like, can I just not do the discourse? And like, no, you have to sit the discourse. So that's probably my biggest criticism of it. But other than that, in general, I'm very glad I did it. It really pushed me to my limits, especially when you do the sessions where it's expected of you to not move for at least an hour. You're supposed to meditate in this position and not move a muscle and not be focusing on how intensively painful all of that is and maintain your focus. That was incredible to see, to push yourself to be like, wow, yeah, I can actually do this. My legs don't fall off. It might hurt a bit. My ass gets a bit numb, but I can literally sit still, not move a muscle, and have this incredible focus. It was quite a good way to get to know how powerful you are. And then by the last day, bit of a disclaimer, spoiler here. If you ever are going to do this course, you might want to skip forward a few minutes to avoid what is going to be a spoiler of what happens at the end. So on the last day, there is a really beautiful exercise called Meta. And now we're not talking Zuckerberg, let's plug everybody into the matrix Meta. We're talking about a meditation practice called Meta, where it comes from your heart. And what you do is you literally just send love. You just emit love from inside yourself and just send love to the world, send love to humanity. Send love to everything around you. And I tell you what, after 9.5 days of grueling, intense struggle and work and pain, that love meditation was incredible. I just remember sitting there, just like glowing, like my entire being was just like, woo. It was really quite amazing. You could really feel the love. And there's someone on Instagram actually who's saying that they love the meta meditation. So that's cool that someone knows what I'm talking about. Yes, it's really nice. It's really quite an awesome technique. And you can actually just do that on its own. Just do a nice love meditation, get into this state and just feel this love. It's really quite a nice experience. But at the end of this toil, it was great. And then, yeah, that was the end of the course. So that was my Vipassana experience. And then from then, I was quite dedicated because they, you know, had all this momentum and they were saying you should practice this for 2 hours a day to keep it up. And I actually did for a while. I remember going to another Helpex, and if you don't know what Helpex is, go to my website or go to my Instagram or my Telegram. I just did a video about what Helpex is. But anyway, so I went to a Helpex straight after this, and there was two couples. I think one was from Belgium, one was from somewhere else. I can't remember what the other couple was. But the Belgium couple were really interested in what I was doing and what I'd done and the meditation. And they joined me because I was doing it for an hour in the morning, an hour at night. And I really pushed these guys to their limits. They were pretty new to meditation and they just jumped straight in with me, like, yeah, let's do an hour here and there. And I really pushed them, but I was impressed. But yeah, I kept that up for a while, and then I slowly brought it down to about an hour. And then I think I was at about half an hour every day, and I did that for about a year. And really, I'd actually recommend that. I wouldn't recommend you doing 2 hours a day. That's too much. Even half an hour is pushing it. You could get away with 15 minutes a day. And then if you get really, really good, once you've had enough practice, 5 minutes is more than enough if you can maintain your focus uninterrupted pretty much for 5 minutes. Now, if you can do that, yeah, let me know how powerful that is, because try and sit down and keep focus on something for 5 minutes without a thought coming in and taking you off on a little journey somewhere. I can assure you, unless you have some magic gift, that's pretty damn difficult. But when you can do that, 5 minutes is enough. But then you're just starting out. If you just aim for 15 minutes a day, but you did it consistently, because that's the key. With meditation, if you want to see the benefits, you need to do it consistently. It'll be after a week, 2, 3, 4 weeks after you do it every single day that you really start to build up these benefits. You start to notice a change in how you react to people, how you present or how you show up to people, what you say, what you bring out of people. All of this changes, and what's actually also changing is your brain is being restructured, and that takes a little bit of time. That doesn't happen instantly. You don't do one 15-minute meditation and you've restructured how your brain operates. It does take time, but the brain is quite plastic and it is malleable and open to being changed and influenced. And if you continually do your meditation practice, you will restructure your brain. And I still believe that from that period in my life where I practiced for a year every single day, I created some pretty damn permanent changes in my mind. And to this day now, I believe I am reaping the rewards of having done all of that meditation practice. It's still, there are like parts of my being that have been changed almost permanently in a positive way. And the biggest thing that I've taken is awareness, this razor sharp awareness. This is something that has been incredibly useful in many, many different areas of life. But it's not just awareness of myself and my thoughts, it's awareness of other people, it's awareness of the environment, it's awareness of what's happening around you at any given time, it's awareness of people's reactions, it's awareness of your reactions. This incredible awareness that I've built up has been incredibly useful and has continued to be useful throughout my life. So now, I kind of do a little bit of sort of intention setting and contemplating in the morning. And occasionally, I will do my body scan technique. Like even today, I've had a super productive day, but I was working, working, working. And then I just took what you could call a 5 minute meditation snack break, snacking commas, and just did a 5 minute quick body scan. I hadn't focused for a lot of that time. And then I obviously opened my eyes, come back, and I'm like, wow, I'm like, okay, I can feel that little charge of energy. And this is something that I'd like to help to sort of bring into the perspective here is that there is an unlimited source of energy all around you, available to be tapped into at any time of day, at any place, anywhere, anytime. You can tap into this unlimited source of energy via techniques like the body scan meditation technique and Qigong. Won't get into Qigong, but that's also how you can pull in this from this infinite source of energy at any time, at any place. That's quite powerful, wouldn't you agree? And that is some of the great things that can come from meditation. So I don't practice every day, the Vipassana technique at least, but I do some form of sort of intention setting and contemplating in the morning. And so just to finish my piece on meditation, because if you've just joined on the live stream, this is episode 30 of the Open One podcast. So nice of you to be here. But then I was talking about meditation and I'm going to finish the show by talking about death. But just to finish this piece on meditation is meditation isn't the end, so to speak, in spiritual development. It's not like it's the only thing to go for, but meditation prepares the mind, prepares like your ability to be in touch with your thoughts and what's going on from a day-to-day basis and in a moment-to-moment basis, that it prepares the mind for contemplation. And now Paul Brunton speaks about this a lot in a really eloquent way. So if anybody's interested in what I'm about to speak about, go check out his work. Incredible man, incredible mind. And he speaks a lot about contemplation and how meditation is the foundation for contemplation. And contemplation, in many ways, is actually above meditation. And it's this super deep thinking where you can pull in new ideas, where you can have radical changes in your perspective, in the way you look at this world. And that can have an influence on the rest of your life. So, contemplation is a very, very powerful technique. You can sit down with a problem or sit down with an idea and bring something new into this world. And that's quite special and that's quite powerful. All right. So, yeah, you've got contemplation, but I think I'll finish that part there about what's talking about contemplation. Meditation's a great tool to help you build contemplation. And to finish the show, obviously I said I was going to speak about death. So it's a bit of a heavy subject, but my belief system of what I think happens when we die is actually quite empowering, quite beautiful. I think you're going to really love what I have to say about it. So obviously death is quite scary for a lot of people. It's quite something that when you talk about it, they're like, oh my God, what happens when we die? You know, I'm quite scared about that. I'm quite scared about death. It's a pretty heavy subject, but when you have a solid belief system or a solid structure, spiritual foundation, at least what I found is it takes away the fear of death, takes away the fear of dying, which is very, very useful. I think everybody would benefit greatly from not having a fear of death, right? Because obviously when a family member dies, that's quite sad. You're never going to see them again. That's traumatic. But if we have some sort of belief system where we realize that, oh, okay, maybe that's not the end, maybe their soul, whatever you people like to call it, has gone to another place, then it takes a bit of the edge off. But also, if you actually remove the fear of dying, that has such a great impact on your life in a day-to-day basis. It's like can change how you act, how you speak with people, what you choose to do with this life. You don't have a fear of death. So what I believe happens when you die, and I've actually experienced this on a mushroom experience once, and I have this on my website. You can check it out. You go to my website and you can see I literally went through this experience once when I took a pretty damn heavy dose of Amanita muscaria. So it ties into a philosophy which is put forward from the Law of One, which is that reincarnation is a thing, but it's not just that you'll continually reincarnate on this level of reality and you'll keep going here on some sort of endless cycle. But it's not also what Christianity sort of says, where you just have this one time on earth and then you go to some other place and you go to heaven or hell, depending on how good you've been. The Law of One is pretty awesome, where it says that you can progress through reality, through different kinds of reality. Once you've learned enough about this level of existence, then you will go on to the next density, the next level of reality, if you like. So I think that can actually happen, but you know, it depends on where you are, where you're at. So when I died, at least on this experience, I was greeted by all these beings and they were really happy to see me. And that actually ties into what happened or what people have reported when they have a near-death experience. They'll go through this tunnel of light and then to see these beings and entities. And even today, someone wrote in my chat, yeah, that actually relates a lot to what happened to me. I was shown these beings and I nearly died when I was giving birth. And they were like, if you come here, you won't be able to see your child ever again. So they made the choice to come back to their body or whatever. So that's what happened to these people. But then my life flashed before my eyes. I had this incredible life review and I experienced all these thoughts and feelings I had throughout my life. And I do think that actually happens. And then after that, I was planning my next life. And if you want to go into detail about what my experience, you definitely want to check out my video where I talk about my Amanita muscaria experience and I go into detail about what actually happened to me. And so that was pretty fucking profound. And I do think that happens. But then, if you are going to come back here onto this level of reality, then you'd have some sort of a life review, and then you'll sort of plan your next life, and you'll be like, okay, so I learned these lessons in that life. I was a dickhead there, but I was really good here. I helped this person there, whatever. So I learned this, but I still need to learn about this part of reality, this part of life. So I'm going to choose my next life and I'm going to experience, I'd like to experience this. And now I get onto a brilliant concept that will freak quite a lot of people out when they hear this. But if you've been following us with me so far, and you say, okay, yeah, so reincarnation, when I die, I'm gonna plan my next life, and I want to learn this, and I want to learn that. And I pick the conditions, at least the beginning. Would that mean that you choose your parents? Let's sit with that for a moment. Imagine if you chose your parents. People were like, why the fuck would I choose these guys? Really? Seriously? Why would I choose these guys of all people in the world? Why would I want these people as my parents? And it's a very, very interesting concept. Obviously, if you believe that you have certain lessons to learn, then you would need certain kind of parents to experience this, and you might need to go through certain traumatic experiences to then learn from it to become a better person. You might need to go through being poor or whatever to then learn the lessons of being able to appreciate abundance. So that's a very, very powerful concept, and I invite everyone just to take a moment to think about that. So I think that's really cool. So that's kind of my best guess at what happens when you die, and when then you go and come back into this level of reality, so to speak, if you've got more lessons to learn here. But then if you have learned all the lessons that you need to learn in this level of reality, then maybe you go on to some other next level, which is, I guess, kind of ties into as well what Christianity says about heaven and all of that. So I think that could very well happen. And but then who knows after that? But if also the Law of One talks a lot about that and talks about the different densities and levels of reality and the progression throughout all of it, which is all quite fascinating stuff. So yeah, that's my best guess of what happens when we die. Quite an interesting perspective, and at least for me, it has removed the fear of death on a conscious level. Like, if someone comes up to me, puts a gun to my head, I'm probably going to be pretty fucking scared, right? Who wouldn't be? You've got human instinct there. But the actual idea or thinking about what happens when we die, I'm not worried about that at all. I really am not concerned about that. And I think about what I'll be like when I'm an old man on my deathbed, and I'll pass away quite happily, especially after the life that I've had. So yeah, that's my best guess of what happens when we die. And I hope you've enjoyed what I spoke about with meditation. And this has been episode 30 of the Open One podcast. So thanks for joining me, everybody. Now, I'm going to see if anybody here has a question about anything that I spoke about. Otherwise, we'll call that a day. It's been quite a lot of me talking, but I hope you've enjoyed that. So, Christine, I'm going to just unmute you here. If you have any questions, we can ask you to unmute. If you're still with us, let me know if you've got any
Hello.
questions.
I have
Hi.
two, but I'll only ask one if I'm allowed.
Yeah, you could do two if you want. It's okay.
I'll be as brief as possible. Well, I discovered you through the veil of reality.
Okay.
I'm basically, I didn't learn my lessons. I chose my parents. I think I could merge these two questions. I
Okay.
chose my abusive parents, and I understand that. But I didn't learn my lesson, and I'm a 56-year-old drug addict who owns a liability of a property, and I Veil of Reality talk about occult hostile forces, and I feel like I might have a lot of entry points for those. I feel like I'm in a bit of a hole, to be honest, and I feel like if I meditate while I'm weaning off these drugs, I'm worried that I'll open up more holes, entry points for occult hostile forces.
Okay, so what is your question exactly?
Like basically, spiritually, how do I get out of this hole? I'm obviously trying to wean off drugs, which will take a while, but how do I protect myself from these occult hostile forces, my aura?
Okay, this is quite a huge question, and in fact, I could probably speak to you on a
Sorry.
one-to-one basis about this for a very, I mean, we could even have a coaching call just on that for at least an hour. That's a huge question. Yeah.
It is.
Maybe you want to email me, but I'll cover the point what you said about how meditation might not be a good thing for someone in your position because of what you're dealing with, and that
Yeah.
is what's often said because of how it can open you up a little bit and make you a little bit more sensitive. And that's why for me, when I was doing my Qigong practice, I have had to tone that down a lot because I've noticed if I do way too much
Yeah.
Qigong, I'm just sort of out of body a little bit. I'm not quite as grounded as I should be. So yeah, you
Yeah.
want to be careful with that. Body scan
Yeah.
meditation I found has been a bit more grounding. That sort of brings me a bit more into my body. So you could maybe
Yeah.
experiment with that and see how it helps you or if it makes it worse or not. Because if you just do a little bit, you should notice whether or not that's going to have a detrimental effect or if it actually helps a little bit, right? And if it's like dipping your toe in the water a little bit, if it helps a bit,
Yeah.
then try it a bit more and see how that is. Or if it makes you more sensitive and susceptible, then stop, right? But on everything else you mentioned, yeah, that's a pretty huge subject. And maybe you want to email me or message me and we could go from there.
Yeah. Your email address is on your website, yeah?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
No worries. All right, well, I hope everybody's enjoyed that episode 30 of the Open One podcast. And I'll see you all in the next show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Christine.
Nice.